Aurora.
Yes?
You're not fun by any chance, are you?
I don't really think we should think about that right now. Impatient boys sometimes miss dessert. Not Dirk, starting the episode this week. What a surprise. We're starting a new mix this week. Anniversary mix. I have decided to go with this mix, so they've decided to let me run the show, I guess. I don't know. Good for those guys. This is episode 49. And welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here and not turning this off when you haven't heard Dirk's voice yet. So I'm going to switch this over to the guy that picked the movie this week. Hello, Mikey P. How are you?
I am good. You are right. I'm still high off of the Barbie high that I had today.
Oh, my God.
Taking my kids to that movie, and we were talking about that Dirk, because he's yet to see it. And then
Soon.
Yeah. Soon. And then you're right. I did make the mistake of finishing this movie right after that, about to talk about.
Yep.
I do like this mix idea, this anniversary mix idea.
Well, we'll get into, you had some other options, but we'll get into why you picked this one specifically. And Mikey, what did you pick for this week? Do you want to tell us?
As an anniversary mix, we are doing each decade's anniversary of 2023. So I'm starting with 1983's Terms of Endearment. A couple movies came out that year that were possibilities.
A couple.
Scarface was one of them that I was thinking about, it's been a while since I saw it, but growing up, that was like everybody's godfather. They were like, this is the greatest movie of all time. And when I remember watching it a couple times, not understanding it, I had grown up with like great overrated comments about Scarface. And I was worried I was going to have those same comments today and offend people. So to forego the hatred of our mixers. I didn't pick that movie. I didn't pick Return of the Jedi. It's too big a task. We'd have to roll out the red carpet. We'd have to wear a bunch of cosplay stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about it.
That sounds like a great time.
So this movie won the Academy Award in a bunch of 11 nominations in 1983.
For some things, yeah.
I wanted to know what the hubbub was all about. But I will admit, I think I got it confused with a couple movies like Steel Magnolias and Fried Green Tomatoes and Terms of Endearment. They all kind of lumped together.
Yeah.
None of which I saw. Until this movie.
Funny story. Our other lovely host, he is here, by the way, but he thought this was Remains of the Day. Dirk, you want to tell us a little bit about that? Why you got these two movies confused?
Yeah, I'm fine, Marcy. How are you?
I was going to ask you that after, but it was a nice segue, so you ruined my segue, man. Like, come on.
Listen. Well, listen. All right, I didn't know what Terms of Endearment was. Uh-huh. And, you know, I said to you, I thought it was that film with Anthony Hopkins in, which we both presumed I meant Remains of the Day. But I've since come to realise I didn't mean that. I meant Shadowlands, because that has got Deborah Winger in it, as well as Anthony McHopkins. And they both look really boring. So that's why I had not seen any of those films. That's probably why I hadn't seen Terms of Endearment, because I thought like they were all the same, right? Terms of Endearment, Shadowlands, Remains of the Day. They sound like exactly the same film. And Anthony Hopkins is in two of them, and Deborah Winger is in two of them. So you do the maths there, Mikey and Marcy. They're essentially the same films. I rest my case. Meeting adjourned.
I thought you
were going to say
that went to the lambs, and I was going to die. Yeah.
That was another reason. I don't think we... Is this one of the first movies none of us have seen, too?
Well.
Both me and Marcy went well then at the same time and pushed our glasses up our face. You tell him, Marcy.
Actually.
Well, actually. Back in the day, Dirk and I used to try this fun experiment out that was like, let's pick a movie that neither of us have seen for this mix. And I think I joked we were 1 out of 52 for how well it went. So we stopped doing that.
We stopped that.
But it was all right. It wasn't like the worst thing ever. But no, this was pretty bold though, Mikey, to just be like, hey,
I think we found it was usually the worst film in the mixtape, didn't we? Like out of the four.
Yeah.
And I think it was because we wanted to like always have a fun chat and not be like us down on anything. That's why we kind of got away from it, because then we just sort of said we decided to have friends on instead, Mikey. Do you remember that bit? Mm-hmm. So we would do a movie I would pick, one Marcy would pick, then a shared movie that we both picked together, but normally Marcy would pretty much pick that. And then we had our friends come on. But now the three of us, we all get to pick one. That's three episodes already sorted. The maths is improving. Boop, boop, boop. And then we do the mixtape mixologist random cocktail shaker, and it splits out a name. And that's how we get our fourth one now. But yeah, so we've done movies where none of us have seen it before, and it hasn't always gone well. Hasn't always gone well, Mikey. How confident are you feeling that this movie, Terms of Endearment, is going to go well? Over to you. What would you say?
A law of probability says that I'm not feeling good about it. I mean, I think like an hour into this movie, I was going to text you guys. let's do Return of the Jedi real quick.
Marcy sent me that same message. She's...
Well, it is interesting. I mean, it will make, I think, like, for an interesting conversation, because I think a lot of it was I kept thinking of this movie. Are we getting into it now?
No. Okay. Of course we're not. I don't even know what you've been done in the last two fucking weeks. You know?
Yeah, we have to talk about our lives, Mikey. Our lives.
Okay. Mikey, I'm beginning to think you don't understand the format of this podcast. What? You've got a bigger movie that you've already seen. And you've liked. Okay. Second, you've got to do a little chit chat at the beginning that lasts about 15 to 20 minutes. Okay. And then we talk about the movie and then we pick songs. Okay. That's how we do it. That's how we do it here. You've been on other podcasts and I know they do it differently. All right. But this is how we do on the movie mixtape. And we're paying you wage now. Not H Industries. Okay.
All right, I'll lead into that question. You were writing to us and you said you were putting Betsy down, but you had to watch an hour of Avatar.
Oh, God.
And I just assumed you meant, because we were talking about Avatar The Last Airbender last week. And then, and then I saw your review on Letterboxd real quick. And it was
I didn't see the review yet. Oh, I'm so excited for this. I knew Mikey was wrong, like confused. I knew Mikey thought the wrong thing because I was like, Mikey is way too excited about this. So I know Mikey is not thinking the right Avatar for this at all.
Like Avatar 2, The Way of the Water? That's the film that we're talking about. So we watched it over two nights with Betsy. She's just broken up from school. So it was a kind of a end of school treat that we would sit a treat. I'm doing that in air quotes, that we would watch this 3-hour, 15-minute movie. But we did it over two nights because we couldn't do that with a 9-year-old in one bloody night. So we finished it off today. Have you seen that before, Mikey, that film, that 3-hour, 15-minute kids film?
I love James Cameron. I am not really into seeing this movie. I'm not motivated at all.
No.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Have you not seen it? Right, no spoilers from now on. I promise you that.
No, go for it.
No spoilers. My opinion, sure. But no spoilers. I don't know. It was just... The thing that really got me at the end is so violent. It's really violent in like the last sort of the climactic fight thing. And I was like looking at the rating, trying to think, what was this? It was a 12A. And somebody loses an arm, like not just like... gently loses an arm, it gets like cleaved off, and people are getting shot. People are literally getting shot through the eyeballs with arrows, and there are assault weapons everywhere. And I'm like, how? My daughter is 9 and she got up 4 or 5 times and just said, I'm gonna have to leave the room now. And it's all right, it's a 12A, so you know, she's 9, she's below 12, but like, is that what a 12A is these days? I mean, it was worse than like Freddy's Bloody Nightmare. It's just, I think the only, what do you have to do to get more than PG-13 rating? You probably have to show some boobs. That's it. Show some boobs and you're
away with boobs and one F-bomb in a PG-13 movie over in this country.
So what is Avatar Way of Water in the US? PG-13. What rated is it? Is it? They say fuck in it and they say shit many times. My daughter turned to me and said, he likes saying shit, doesn't he? Rubbing her hands together with glee. Ooh, he can't do me for that one because he said it on the movie we're watching. I don't know. I don't want to slag it off too much, but it wasn't for me. Katie really liked it. She liked all that. She likes. Well, do you know what? I like bits of it. There are bits of it that are good, but it's all the stuff that's not mega violent and really confusing. So there's a gentle bit in the middle where they're just like exploring the land and swimming with massive whales and stuff like that. And I like that. I like that bit. But I didn't like everything else. Look at you asking me about bloody negative opinions straight in, Mikey. Yeah. poking me to give my negative opinions on movies.
What the P stands for, Mikey poking me.
It's a verb and a noun. How have you two been? You been all right?
Yeah, can I give a shout out to some friends of ours?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I want to first, I have now joined you guys with, hey, I have an awesome kid that is named after a comic book character. So our friends over at I Read Comic Books, they posted a comic called Kaya. I had never heard it before, got very excited, bought it. I'm starting to read it, and it's really fun. It's really, I don't know, it's sci-fi, which is like my favorite genre, so that's pretty cool. And the girl, the main protagonist, her name is Kaya, and she's got a cool robot arm, and she's a hunter, and she's really kick-ass. So really cool to see. So now, yeah, so Betsy, Logan, and Kaya, we all have comic book characters after our kids. So I've joined that club, but I just wanted to shout out I Read Comic Books. Go check out their pod. We will put a link in the notes, or Dirk will, not me. So
yeah, you know. If you do read comics, wholeheartedly agree. I think we've all listened to I Read Comic Book Podcast, and they have so many episodes. Like literally, I think they're on like episode 397 or something like that. So if you've read a comic once in your life, they will have covered it on their podcast at some point. So you can just scroll through and have a search. Yeah, I'll put a link.
Okay.
In the show notes.
And then we have to shout out our dear, dear, lovely Tim Hamilton. Tim wrote a book. We did talk about this once before on an episode. I can't remember do you remember what episode it was?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay. Well, the book is called,
So the book is called Meet the Super Duper 7.
Mm-hmm. And Tim was nice enough. Poor Mikey had to buy it, but Tim was nice enough to
pre-order.
Send me a copy. And then I saw today that Dirk got a copy as well. So thank you, Tim. We love you. We appreciate you. I read it to Kaya and we were dying at Hungry Kitty. He's our favorite because we love cats. So good on you, Tim. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. My copy arrived today, immediately opened it and read it instantly with Iris, the two-year-old, together. And we polished it off. I think she was a big fan of the milk twins that never go sour. I think they were her favorites. But Tim Hamilton is the co-host of Sadie Bimco podcast as well as being an amazing cartoonist, and he often writes into this show. And we love you, bloody love you, Tim. Mm-hmm.
We do. We love Tim very much.
Yes. I read that book to my kids too, and you can hear the age range is from 0 to 2 to 9 and 10, so it's good for kids of any of those ages. It's a good book for any of those kids.
What else you been doing, Marcy? Doing anything?
So I got to see Barbie and Oppenheimer last weekend. Go me!
Oh yeah,
yeah. And they were both amazing. So if you get the chance to go see either of those, please do. Mikey has one more to see. Dirk, of course, has both to see. So nothing new there to report.
I love your t-shirts you wore, too.
Thank you. I should have worn one today. I didn't, though. My bad. Sorry, everybody.
What did you wear to Oppenheimer?
I wore Florence Pugh.
Oh, of course. Because she is in Midsommar.
Because she's in Oppenheimer, yeah.
Oh,
I'm but not she's mocking not, you, I swear, I'm not, really not.
She's not, but she's not Oppenheimer though, right?
No, she's not, but she could have pulled it off. I know she could have. It would, actually, mm-hmm. that would have been fucking awesome. What, where are we doing? Where do we get this to happen, actually?
Can you imagine the fever of the right-wing press at the woke agenda of rebranding Oppenheimer as Florence Pugh Pugh Pugh? How, you went to see Barbie, didn't you, as well?
I did see Barbie. I did see Barbie. We took the kids, and it seemed like it was one of those movies that everybody could get into. They loved it. My son talked throughout the whole thing in the theater, and he gets kind of animated when there's something like, I suspect it's like when he has like a little crush on screen and he sees somebody like, you know, I think Margot Robbie maybe was like his type, but he starts talking. He's like, oh, they should do this, they should do that. And then he goes, you know, there's a big fight number, but it turns into a dance number. And he's like, I want to see them fight. I want to see them fight, Dad. Afterwards, my daughter comes out and she gave it 2.5 stars.
Oh my God.
And she gives everything 5 stars, but she said it was good. I just didn't get why some things were funny because we were laughing throughout it. It is a weird, it was definitely, I mean, maybe we'll do this one day, but it was definitely like, had a lot of balancing to do because it is kid appropriate, but it's also very adult appropriate. I highly recommend this movie. I'm definitely, I think it's like the most hype movie of all time, but I don't think you could overhype it. I think it's really good. I think, Dirk, when you watch it, I'd be interested to know what you think.
Yeah. Well, I think we are going to go watch it fairly soon because Bets has seen every single Barbie movie in the history of the world. And so he's definitely wanted to see this. I do feel like there's plenty of kids movies that strike the right chord between adult content and kid content, though, you know, like, I mean, even off the top of my head right now, Toy Story, as an example, you're telling me that there's not adult content in Toy Story? There fucking is. All right. There's loads of stuff in there. So I feel like plenty of films go for it and carry it off. So I've got faith, but the question I've got,
My son kept mentioning the Lego movie while I was watching it. He's like, oh, this Lego
that
movie.
Was one of the inspirations for it. Yeah. Did you know that, Mikey?
Oh, no, really? No way. That's cool. That's cool. It was good like that.
There is one question, though, that I need answering, okay? And that question is this. Marcy, how do you now feel about Margot Robbie?
I knew this was going to happen, and I already told Mikey. So there was also something else I saw this year with Margot Robbie. It's called Asteroid City, one of the two new Wes Anderson movies this year, but loved it. And I absolutely loved her in Barbie. And I was just telling Mikey that she saved Barbie because she is the executive producer on Barbie. So whenever the studios wanted to shut anything down, because Greta Gerwig and her partner Noah Baumbach wrote the movie together, she said, nope, we're going to do it. And she kept it in the movie, and thank God she did, because it is like one of my favorite movies of the year, and I am now full team Margot Robbie. Thank you, Margot.
Oh, nice. You know. So let's get down to business.
Actually, that's what we were doing, and actually, I was on a trip last week. I went to Houston.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I recorded this guy. I was walking around a neighborhood, and he came up to me.
Mikey, stop. Are you doing the synopsis already?
Yeah, I'm doing the synopsis already.
Hey, Bob, it's keep going, Logan keep going. Again. It's Logan in the Houston, Texas.
Hold on.
You ruined it.
It's like both of you have no chill in you. You just spring a synopsis on us.
You just said, I think we talked enough. Let's just get right into it. Did you just say that?
He said,
I'm going to go right for it. You weren't paying attention. I knew what was going on. Oh, you weren't paying God. Attention.
It's like dinner with the chimps here. You've got to, this is a product we are releasing to the wild. You've got to have some form of decorum and professionalism. Mikey, sorry, you continue.
I think what I did was wrong now. I feel like...
No, don't listen to him. He's wrong.
Just go, Mikey.
All right. I don't know, I'm going to work.
So I didn't hear any of it the first time anyway.
All right.
So Scott was paying
attention. I'm just going to go into it. Hey, neighbor. Welcome to the Houston suburbs. Garrett Breedlove here. That's right. Former NASA hero, Garrett Breedlove. Stop it. Only 106 astronauts in the world, and I'm one of them. You might see me late at night swimming in my pool. Or there's my neighbor. Over there is my neighbor, Aurora Greenway. She and I have this sexual tension thing going on for the last 15 years. She's a looker, no doubt. She comes with her own fan club of male suitors. I'm not jealous. I myself am what you call a creature of the night. Only my prey tend to be a little more, well, how can you say, an age that could be my granddaughter. Aurora, though, she's a real piece of work. Her and her daughter have this love-hate thing going on, but they are probably best friends, too. Emma comes and goes, and when she does come back, she seems to have another kid. Maybe I should go easy on her. Not one to gossip, but her husband, Flack or Flap, is not much different than Harry Dunn himself. Anyway, I fear commitment, so I'm going to keep my distance while casually showing up whenever the emotions are right that make it look like I'm a hero. See you around. Oh, and one more thing. Emma and Flap cheat on each other, and Emma has cancer. Bye.
Holy shit. Mikey.
That was the best Danny DeVito impression I ever had.
In practice, it was a lot better. I might have to re-record it later in post. No. You guys were cracking me up.
No, that was perfect. Oh, my God.
Listening to that synopsis, you can see why it got all the Oscars. Because,
yeah.
Mikey, thank you. That was blessed.
Thank you very much. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is Terms of Endearment from 1983, directed by James L. Brooke off of The Simpsons.
First directorial debut, too.
He won Best Director at the Oscars as well, didn't he?
That's mad. That's crazy.
I find that mad.
When I was going through the movies in 1983, it was like kind of, not to talk about badly, but it was slim pickings. I mean, I should have done Return of the Jedi, but it was either this or like Scarface, like I said, or you guys did Hunger, and there was like Sleepaway.
There was one I saw that I really like that our good friend Ketcher also likes, The Big Chill. Have you guys ever seen The Big Chill?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun movie. Almost similar to this, but it's about friends, sort of.
I was interested in this, though, because it is one of those movies you hear in the vernacular of like on people's tongues when they talk about. I mean, I've heard this movie. I think everybody's kind of heard of this movie somehow, probably because it won the Oscar. But I always kind of want to know what it was about. And I kind of knew from secondhand that the performances are great. I got to be honest, though. Like when I started, I was sort of like, you know, waiting for a draw to some of these characters. I mean, it's cute. Like, and it's cute, their relationship, because Deborah Winger and what was the mom's name?
Shirley MacLaine.
They have the Aurora. I think that's what everybody knows about, is that they have this relationship of a mother daughter where they tell everything to each other, but they have like, they're pretty upfront about it, and they say harsh things to each other, but they are, like I kind of wrote up, they are best friends. And that's, I think, what all I knew about it. But there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of relationships that kind of intertwine, and it felt more like a play than it did a film, which I think is... Mm-hmm. I think it got turned into a play. And I think, just going back to what Dirk said about James L. Brooks winning the Best Director, I'm actually kind of was like, there's, not to badmouth it, I really don't want to, but there's really nothing going on behind the camera. There's no relationship with the camera. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a setup and performance.
Can I tell you what I told Dirk before? So I'd watched it and I was telling Dirk, the best way to describe this movie is Oscar bait. This is an Oscar bait movie, 100%. Yeah. So that's what it is. And that's why it won so many different things.
But I feel like you can see James L. Brooks's sort of like sitcom stamp on it, can't you? You can see that he'd done like The Taxi and Mary Tyler Moore Show, isn't it? I think, Marcy, you said he'd done the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I know he'd definitely done Taxi. And that's, I presume that's why Danny DeVito turns up and just sits there in the corner for 45 minutes, just not really advancing anything about the plot. But it felt to me in terms of like it felt like vignettes in a life, like obviously like it was like a each like we got snapshots of a life lived, but like yeah, whimsical, really like kind of, even though there was some like difficult relationships within there, it always felt like really whimsy, had a lot of whimsy to it at the beginning. And I thought in a way this was like almost like a made for TV movie or like an extended sort of sitcom. And certainly the direction, like you said, Mikey, didn't make me think any different. It didn't feel like they were doing anything super interesting with their camera lenses.
Yeah, you mentioned sitcoms too, and I think that's what I was seeing. I'm like, there's nothing compelling about it that we don't see on TV now. And I think maybe that's the point, like it blazed a trail, because going back to 1983, probably nobody talked about, and I don't know, like in a movie, like infidelity, I guess, or cancer, or kind of like tough love from your mother, maybe. And there was, like I said, going back to the other movies, since I had to pick a 1983 movie, there probably maybe wasn't anything as, I don't know, cerebral maybe, or adult, for lack of a better word. The best movies to me are the ones that are timeless. It doesn't matter when they're made. And this was just sort of like of the time, it felt like very much.
So it's funny you say that. This kind of reminds me of our conversation about The Sting, which was a brand new movie for both of us. But The Sting felt like the last breath of old Hollywood before you get the radical 70s. So this feels like the 80s, Reagan time over here. They're trying to go back to something old-fashioned in Hollywood, and this is 100% it. This is, it's like, turn back from the crazy 70s. You know what I mean? Like, we really get...
That's a great point.
Like, oh, white picket fence, neighborhood, suburbia. That's exactly what this is going back to. And this was Hollywood probably saying, like, we're going to vote for this because we want these types of movies again. This is the America we're living in, and this is what we want. And unfortunately... the Oscars, it's politics. It's not real. I mean, I still get excited about it and I love it very much, but it's not real. It's like, what do we want? What story do we want to tell? What do we want Hollywood to be right now? And like you said, Mikey, because after this, you get Steel Magnolias, you get like 9 to 5, you get so many movies like this after, because I guess that's just what America wanted after the 70s. I don't know, you know? That's just my guess.
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you that, Marcy, actually, because you're the queen of like golden age of cinema. I did wonder when I was watching it, what age of cinema is this? Like, where does it fit into the history books? But you just explained it. You eloquently explained it there. I'm not asking for a better answer, but it was something that struck me.
But then, like, kind of since we just talked about Bill and Ted, at the end of the 80s, it goes back to fun, radical, cool times, because you got like Adventures in Babysitting, which we covered, and Bill and Ted and those types of movies. And then the 90s is a lot of fun. And then the 90s goes back to like thrillers and spy movies and kind of like a lesser version of the 70s, not as wild, but not as tamed as the beginning of the 80s. So it's kind of just like, who's pulling the strings? Who's running these companies? Who's running the country? That's what you have to look at when you look at these decades. And that's what this era was at this time in this country, at least. So that's my opinion on the whole thing.
I mean, there were definitely still things that I was connecting with, like, especially like as it's, I think, you know, as it starts out and what the first scene is the mum, Aurora, checking her baby is still breathing when she's asleep, that first child. Oh my goodness. How many times was I there with that first child where you're just standing in the doorway and you were like, Are they breathing? No. I just remember going to buy like the first ever cot mattress before Betsy was here, and the woman in the shop was selling them. She's like, so you can get this one. This is really nice. This is like this amount of money. Or you can pay £150 more and get this one that prevents cot death. Oh, okay. We were like, Jesus. What kind of Jesus, Mary Jo? But like that paranoia you have about, is your baby still breathing? And going in and physically waking them up and dealing with the consequences, because it's better knowing that they're alive for your state of mind at that moment. Absolutely, 100%. I think, I don't know a new parent that probably hasn't done that, right? You two are all both nodding there.
I still do it, even though Kaya's in her own room now. I try it. The door is very creaky and I just am like... okay, we'll be as quiet as possible. And you're just like, it still makes the noise, but she never wakes up. So luckily I can peek in at her.
But the difference is once she's woke up, you would probably tend to her where the McLean walks out. I thought was great.
Oh, she's fine. She's breathing. She's okay. She just late. She's fine. We're good. That's what she says when she's in the room.
But I guess it is a good cold opening. It sets the tone for what their relationship is. And I thought the whole movie was going to be the two of them. But it really is filled with her relationship to Jeff Daniels, and then it's Shirley MacLaine's relationship to Jack Nicholson. So I was kind of like surprised at that. I thought it would just be completely the mother-daughter relationship.
Well, you know what I was going to say, Mikey, is it feels like the main relationship in this movie is them. They always go back to each other. They always find each other again. They have issues with other people, but that's who it comes down to is this mother and daughter.
Yeah.
They have each other, really. Like, even with like the other things going on. That's how I felt. But I am a daughter of a mother and a mother of a daughter. So maybe I just looked at it a different way.
The cycle continues. No, I think so too, Marcy. I think it was definitely it took me a while to appreciate what the movie was going to be, even when it started. And then we get a lot of quick time jumps, really. And we don't I feel like we don't get a lot of extra information. Like, for example, all of a sudden, Flap, is that his name? Flap, the Jeff Daniels character. All of a sudden, he's having an affair. And like, we don't really, I don't, that just sort of like, he's just having an affair. Like, what, why? There was no real colorful information surrounding that. So it was all these little like jumps forward in time. And then after about maybe like 20, 25 minutes, I was like, all right, these are just like snapshots. That's what we're getting. And it's a window into a life. And that's what we're being privy to, and it's how your relationships sort of grow, develop, change over that time. It's coloured by Aurora's husband, Emma, is that right? Emma's dad dying young, so it is just the two of them. They had a very, dependent relationship in terms of Aurora being very dependent on Emma and Emma wanting to escape. That's the sort of feeling that I got, and that's why she very quickly sort of marries Jeff Daniels' character and they move away. And so it took me a while to sort of bed in with it. I didn't know, is it a comedy? It felt like a comedy. And then at the end it didn't. But like, I think 3/4 of the movie is a comedy, would you say? I don't know.
I would call this the dramedy character.
Dramedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously James L. Brooks is talented, right? He is talented. I think it was just trying to figure out what this was, really, wasn't it? I don't know, Mikey, you sort of said like maybe you got an hour into it and you almost text and said, well, maybe we should just do Return of the Jedi. But how were you feeling when you were watching it?
I was confused, I think, on what I think which character or what I was supposed to get out of it, because even the mother-daughter relationship was strained and I didn't really ever feel towards the end that it kind of it was a lot of setup, and I don't know if any of those arcs kind of were complete. And I guess that's what life is, kind of thing. I mean, they do stay true to each other, like the mother daughter. Like Shirley MacLaine has this one great scene. I'm sure it was her Oscar, video that she sent in where she's
the real
yelling,
Oscar reel, yeah,
the Oscar reel where she's screaming at everybody to give her shot.
It is. That's what they used, Mikey. Yeah, you're 100% correct.
It seems stop, like one of those chew the furniture type of things. Where
stop. Which bit are you talking about? Sorry.
At the end where she's sick and she's in the hospital and then Shirley MacLaine comes out and she's screaming at all the doctors, it's 10 of 10 or something, and she needs her shot. She's And it just seemed very much like it. So, there's a lot of parts where it felt like that fake movie that's on in other movies where they're just like, here's the Oscars. It's like an Oscar reel. But I didn't really kind of – it was tough. I don't know why. I found myself really just enjoying the Jack Nicholson and the Shirley MacLaine relationship more than anything else that was going on. It felt like I was entertained by that and I wanted to see their romance. Like I was watching a rom-com or something. But even like Deborah Winger, her character, she you like her, but she does some things like when things get tough where she's yelling at her kids – She has the supermarket scene. It's very tough. Like, she doesn't have enough money to pay for the groceries, and everybody's giving her shit. Like, it's one of the worst, like, humanitarian scenes ever in movies where nobody's helping her. And she yells, and John Lithgow's there, and he helps her pay for her groceries. And in the parking lot, she's, like, screaming at her kid in a real nasty way, like, not even funny way. And, like, they try to make it funny when John Lithgow's like, oh.
That's what I was going to say. The humor was John Lithgow being like, oh, it's okay, their son, or, like, whatever he says.
He was trying to diffuse the situation, though, right? So he was, that's what he was doing. He said, nice boys, you're great with them, too. I wrote that down because it was so ridiculous when she'd been abhorrent with them.
But it was, like, one of those, there's unredeemable type of, like, I get being stressed out with your kids, but it was, like, yelling with.
But that was because she didn't want the son to hear her flirt with this man, right? She was going to flirt with John Lithgow's character at that point, and it does lead on to an affair. So she didn't want him to hear it, was why she was telling him to bog off, I think. But yeah, she had a megaphone in his face telling him to get out, wasn't she? Yeah. I think for the most part, I mean, I like Deborah Winger's performance, but it's very like, I don't want to use like cliches, but it's kind of like wacky, isn't it? It's like wacky. It's that like kind of like wacky and kooky style performance where it's difficult to then try to get a real emotional connection because everything just seems a little bit like overplayed. It just seemed a little bit like everything was kind of taken to an extreme because I think she was really, I really warmed to her. I think she's really, I think she does a good job of putting you in her position, like especially later on where she feels, I don't know, downtrodden when she meets her friends in New York and her reaction to that. I really liked her performance, but it's just the way it was written. I didn't always warm to it.
So like kind of going on with that, and I'm going to end with that luncheon she has that you were talking about too, kind of feels like they're just trying to say something with like a lot of women at that time where it was like, you got married young, you had kids right away, you didn't have a career, you didn't have a life, your family was your life. And she maybe felt like that's what she needed to do, especially to get away from her mother. And then she does all these things and then she has all these kids and then she realizes like, maybe I want to do this, this and this, but I can't. So she kind of puts her kids secondary, I feel like, a lot of the time in this movie. And then, yeah, she has that luncheon where they're like, you didn't work. And she's kind of like regretting not ever really having a job and just being a mom. And I think it's just kind of like reflecting on like women of that time. Because even going into movies of that time, you've got like Working Girl and 9 to 5, where it's like women are going in the office and making a name for themselves. And like the tide is shifting. You're not just at home making sandwiches, like, you know. So she's kind of like one of the last like stay-at-home mom of her generation, probably. So I kind of got that from the whole performance too. Like, she just had so much regret, but unfortunately she was taking that on the children. And I had a hard time with that though.
And so. even when she discovers Flaps having an affair, she still was like cooking dinner for him in that evening, which I found hard to compute. But I think it's what you say, Marcy, that was like the role in the relationship. And, you know, that is a valid role. I'm not, that is, you know, in your relationships, if someone works, someone doesn't work, then that's your role and that's all fine. But I think it was when one of you was removing yourself from that commitment, like as in Flat was having the affair and yet she was still they're cooking dinner, having that on the table. And I know she has an affair as well.
Well, it's interesting, too, that you mentioned that is because we don't actually know 100%. I mean, we're pretty sure. But, like, you know, Jeff Daniels' character is kind of, like, denying, like, that he was having. Because we just see him talking to somebody in the college where he's working. And then we see her later again when they move, sort of like he got her the job there. And it alludes to like an affair, but we don't actually know for sure. And even John Lithgow is like over the moon about Deborah Winger, but we don't ever see scenes of them with other people. So it's almost like it creates this like a real life situation where it's like, I'm pretty sure, but I just have not seen them in an affair, which is,
I suppose it's like real life, I guess, isn't it? In a way, I suppose that is like real life. Did you know, and this is connected, I'm not going off on a random tangent, did you know this movie has a sequel?
Yeah.
No.
I was going to bring that up when you were talking about the kids, yeah.
But the reason I bring it up now is in the sequel, the Jeff Daniels character is not involved in raising the kids. It's all the Aurora is raising the three kids. So that, you know, he's a deadbeat Mikey, isn't he? Yeah.
The worst type of person. The whole movie is like, this guy sucks. hands off to him, because like it's hard to be in a movie where you just suck the whole movie. He sucks.
Yeah. I was unsure at the beginning because like, imagine marrying into that family. Imagine marrying into it. And just like your mother-in-law doesn't come to your wedding because can't even remember what the reason was.
Because she was right about him.
Yeah.
Well, her thing is actually pretty good, where she says you're not extraordinary enough to have a failed marriage, to recover from a failed marriage, which is, I guess, a backhanded compliment. She was trying to help her, I guess, but she kind of saw the worth of Jeff Daniels and maybe saw something that she didn't, and she was looking out for her, maybe. And he handled that first phone call pretty well with her, and you think the good things about Jeff Daniels and be like, oh, mother-in-law is not giving him a chance, and he ends up turning out to be everything that she was trying to protect
from
him.
True. But if you'd said to one of your kids, if you thought that about one of your kids' partners, you would still support them and go to the wedding, wouldn't you?
If my daughter's marrying Jeff Daniels, I don't know. No, in this movie. Or my son. I don't know. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, yeah, of course you would support.
Because you can never take that back, right? So there are some things that you can just never undo. And one of them is not going to your kid's wedding because you're in a bloody mood.
It's amazing how, like, right after that, though, they're having a phone call conversation, like two girlfriends talking right after that. So
that's what I mean. Like, this relationship, they always find their way back to each other. Like, that's why they're the main relationship.
Marcy, I'm glad you're here, too, because just from... Because...
Thank you so much. I am here, yes.
Because of the woman's perspective, because I feel like one thing to talk well about James L. Brooks is I feel like he does... Some of the things we're talking about, he does tap into... Maybe is of the time, but the women's point of view. I think he writes women really well, but that's also like, then I also hear another movie he wrote, like As Good As It Gets, where there's a line where he says, how do you write women so well? And he's like, I take away reason and accountability, which I don't, which so makes me wonder what he thinks about women. But I was wondering, I feel like maybe that's why there's all this Oscar talk too, or all these awards, was because there wasn't really, I'm thinking of 1983, there's not really fleshed out women characters, especially at the time, where this was maybe more of like a woman's voice, and to have it written by a man, I think was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I can understand that. Like, Aurora is pretty independent, where she'll have like suitors, but she's like, I'm not sleeping with them, and I'm not kissing them, and they go by my rules, so this is my house, my rules, and she's like, you know, she does what she wants to do. And she's the one that makes the, like, proposition to Jack Nicholson. You know what I mean? Like, I love the line when she says, like, you should date someone that wasn't a felony for you. So, you know, she calls the shots, and she's a pretty tough lady. I will say that. She's crazy, but she's a tough lady. But who can blame her? She's been through a lot. She lost her husband. You know, her daughter's not there with her anymore. And then with Emma, I really like that Emma finds happiness for herself with the John Lithgow thing. Like, she gets something for herself. She's not afraid to go after that when she's unhappy. I actually thought they were very cute together. That was my opinion. I thought John Lithgow was adorable in this movie because he just seems so like, oh, gee, golly, like, look at me. Like, I got a lady friend. And so I thought he was really cute. I was happy to see that he had an Oscar nomination for it as well. I was really bummed, though, I'm just going to say, that he didn't show up at the end of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of thought, I expected her to reach out to him and be like, I'm dying. Do you want to stay? Because they seem to really care about each other.
But I guess that was you. Sorry, Marcy. Just to, the context of it is like, it's 1980, whatever it is. You know, how do they reach out? It's carrier pigeon, you know?
There's this thing called a telephone.
You know, they have to send smoke signals in the sky. Technology was not what it is now, where you're just instant messaging everyone.
But they had telephones. It's not like it was like the Stone Age.
Probably couldn't remember the number.
No, back in that day, you remembered numbers, trust me. I remember those days. You had those ingrained in your brain, okay?
Oh my goodness. Marcy, you were -7 when this film came out.
But I grew up in the 90s. I used to have to call my friends on my house phone all the time. So I used to have numbers. I still have some numbers memorized.
Well, Marcy, I'm glad you're here too. Because this is one of your girls. We're talking about one of your girls again, Shirley MacLaine. Yeah. So how did you feel her performance was?
It just did not. It's not the Shirley MacLaine I know, if that makes sense. Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fun. It was still fun, but it was so different than. But I think that just goes to show how amazing she is. Because she was like kooky and fun and out there in this role. And I really like that, especially the part. I don't know why, but when they finally go out to lunch, her and Jack Nicholson, it reminded me of Ferris Bueller. Like when it's like two people like pretending to be something they're not at a luncheon. You know what I mean? And then them in the car on the beach. I don't know. It was so weird that I just was like losing it. I was like dying because I was like, why is this happening? Like, and when like driving went out in the ocean and like making out in the ocean. And I just like, they were really fun. They were really fun to watch. But I will say this. I love Jack Nicholson. I think he is great. But he is always just Jack Nicholson. So whenever they're like, the astronaut's moving in next door, I was like, who's the astronaut? I was like, oh my God, it's just Jack. I cannot believe Jack Nicholson as an astronaut. But I always have fun when I see him, and I love seeing him. And I know he got an Oscar win, and so did Shirley MacLaine for this movie. I think they're just having a good time, you know, and I can get behind that 100%. But what I know her from, especially like The Apartment, like that's iconic. That's iconic Shirley MacLaine to me. She's just a little bit older, going, doing something kookier. I liked it. It was fun. It just wasn't what I was used to. So what did you think after seeing her from The Apartment to this?
I loved her in The Apartment. I thought she was the best thing in The Apartment, really, way more than Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon's character from The Apartment would be well suited in this film, I think. The way that he performs in that, whereas she felt like, I think I said at the time, she felt like she was an actress, an actor now, you know, delivering that part all those years ago. I don't know. I struggled to even realize it was the same person, which I think is good, you know, because that's probably what you should do. Whereas I wrote down, is this the most Jack Nicholson performance ever? You know, it's like, there's no mistaking this is Jack Nicholson. Whereas I think, you know, the Shirley MacLaine performance, it is different to what my admittedly limited experience of her is. So yeah, I was, which is a credit, which is not a negative. That is a credit, because I was a little bored of Jack being Jack, apart from when he opens the door and he's that little red nightgown he was wearing, and he was like, oh, you saucy bugger, Jack.
Shirley MacLaine did a really good job, because I'm reading about like the making of afterwards, and it was like Deborah Winger apparently is really difficult to work with, and she was trying to come off a cocaine addiction on this movie, and she was apparently really mean to Shirley MacLaine, and they would do sort of off the wall type of getting ready for a scene. And even when she got an Oscar nomination for this, and they said, you know, she probably should have campaigned for Best Supporting Actress, but she was also the main star, and so was Shirley MacLaine. So they both were up for the award. And then when Shirley MacLaine won, she apparently went up and said, you know, half of this award is yours. And she's like, yeah, I'll take half of it, kind of thing. There was a lot of animosity, I guess, between them on the set, which is strange because it doesn't come across at all on the scene. It very much seemed like a mother-daughter relationship. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny how much goes on behind the scene, but as soon as like they yell action, how professional these people do become.
Apparently James L. Brooks is a tough director too, where he likes,
I've heard that before,
shooting too, with tension or something. So, and yeah. I don't know, it seems weird behind the scene, but I will say, like, it did at parts there, it did seem like a cozy blanket, to go back to that mixed talk, where it was like, I could see how people maybe rewatch this, you know, just because it's like a family oriented movie. But I just didn't like get into it in that way.
Yeah.
I will say one of the things that threw me off was the music. Please don't tell me the music got nominated for Academy Award.
Oh my God, it did. But that is so funny to say that. Okay, wait. So I started it and I said, Dirk, this is the worst music score for a movie I've ever heard in my life. And he was like, what? And I was like, yes. And it did get nominated for best score. It was like cheese to the 10th degree cheese. music.
Not only that, just the placement of it was just like, she's running away. She's like, come back here. I'm not having an affair with her. And it's like this big dramatic scene. And it was like,
whack, whack, whack. Yeah, I agree.
I'm dying of cancer.
Shit.
But that's the, and I think that's part of the, I was flabbergasted when the tone shifted to her getting cancer at the end. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
This is not going to happen, though. I mean, like, honestly, like, leading up to it, I was like, what's going on? What's the point here?
Right? Well, I thought it was just going to be, this is this person's life. Here we go. We're telling you this story. All the ups and downs. She has an affair. He's all right. But then she goes back to her fella because he gets a job in wherever it was, Nebraska. I can't remember. But, you know, I thought that's what he was going to get. And then she again got cancer. And I don't know. I wasn't bothered.
Yeah, I will agree. I felt like at that point it was like somebody wrote the movie and it had a different ending. And then they're like, no, go back. Let's kill her off. Let's go back like halfway and give her cancer and kill her off.
Because I feel like I was kind of reflecting a little bit. We've done a couple of movies on this podcast that have talked about the subject of cancer within families. I think we've at least done one. I'm not going to say which one that is because it's a little bit of a spoiler. But they were so that was so personally driven, those movies. Whereas this, it was just kind of like I've had 2 hours of sitcom music and now somebody's got cancer. I was like, oh, what? I just like, and then, you know, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but then she dies in this hospital and it's like, what? Is that it? She's just dead. Like she was just up talking 2 minutes ago. And look, listen, for full clarity, you know, I'm aware of what happens when people die. Okay. And she was just up talking. Just nonchalant. Nobody was holding her hand. Her husband was asleep in the chair. Her mum was over there. And, like, nobody was there, like literally with her or anything. And I was like, how am I supposed... I'm not getting any kind of emotional connection or sadness to this moment, which is your big moment. She's just literally had a conversation about wanting some jelly or something. And then she's gone. And nobody's really reacted to it. There was a moment afterwards, like about 20 seconds after she died, maybe 30 seconds, and Aurora, the mum, says something like, this is the worst thing in the, you know, this is the worst feeling anyone could have. And I presume she meant being a parent who loses their child, which I can imagine that is the worst feeling ever. But I didn't believe it. That it just was like something that just came out of her mouth. She was telling me that. She wasn't showing me that. And that sounds ridiculous for me to say on this bloody podcast sat in my front room saying that Shirley MacLaine didn't make me believe that. But I didn't. And I was a bit like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Deflated, really, Mikey. I'm sorry to say.
The thing that made me really sad, though. So, like, one of my big fears being a mother is I want to have enough time with my kids. So I can't imagine knowing you're going to die and you know, like, your husband's not going to take care of them and you know your psycho mother's going to get them. So that's really upsetting. So the scene that actually really made me cry really hard was when she calls the boys in. Now, Tommy could care less that his mom was going, but Teddy, the little one, was really upset and it was making me really upset how upset he was. And then they go and right before they go, she's like, that went pretty well, didn't it? And Teddy was just sobbing and was like, uh-huh. I lost it because I just don't know how I'm ever going to say goodbye to Kaya when that day comes, and I'm not ready for it ever, and hopefully it's a long, long time away. But that really, that killed me. And the other thing that killed me, because it's just relatable, it's when they're all at the hotel, the pool or whatever, and Aurora's with all the grandkids. And I think her name's Rose, the maid or whatever. And Danny DeVito's randomly there. and so her and Jack Nicholson kind of had like a little bit of a breakup. Like one of the best lines in the movie is she says, like, you don't even know how much you're going to miss me, whenever he like kind of ends things with her. And he just shows up. And why I liked that so much and why that made me cry is just sometimes when you're going through something, there's just that one person you want to talk to, you want to see. And that's what he was for her. And it was just like...
That's for me.
That's both of you for me sometimes. I'm just having a day. I'm like, hello, please just listen to me. Thank you. So I really liked that because it was just nice because it's relatable. Like where you just know there's just that one person. There's that one person you really want to talk to or see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it changes and everything. Yeah.
There's a lot of truths in that. Mm-hmm. But equally, I don't think it meant from Jack Nicholson's character's point of view that he was committing to anything, was it? But he just recognized as well that that was something that he really wanted to do and that he felt like he probably should do. And I think that's okay. You know, there doesn't have to be a movement into a rekindling of a relationship. That just has to be, you know, this person is important and she's going through some stuff, so I'm going to be there for her. I did love that. Yeah, I like that. I did like that as well. Definitely.
Now I feel bad. I made a joke of that in my synopsis, though.
No. Mike, I thought you were talking more at the end when he's like, you want dance lessons? I'll get you dance lessons.
It's more like, why is Danny DeVito there? Like, what is he getting out of it?
No explanation.
Hey, wait, I've got a trick question for you. What other Oscar-winning Best Picture movie were Jack Nicholson and Danny DeVito in together?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, you got it.
Twins.
Did you know that, Mikey?
I like playing that 6 degrees of separation kind of in my head. They're shaking hands. I'm like, that's weird. Danny DeVito and him shaking hands. It was a weird thing. How about the
Marcy? Marcy just asked a question. You answered it correctly within 2 seconds, and she just went, "Did you know that, Mikey?" You fucking knew it. He just gave you the answer to the question.
I was wondering if you researched it or if you knew it.
That's what she said.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Yeah. I knew it.
It was a weird scene where I see them shaking hands. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're both. And Rhea Perlman's in it. What? How about this conversation, though, when they're like talking about what to do with the kids? First of all, Flap, what the F, man? You can't take care of what? You were the worst person.
Wait, did he say that in the movie? He wasn't going to take care of them.
Well, he told Shirley MacLaine, he's like, no, it's not up to you. You don't have an invitation to tell me what I do with my kids. But then, like, him and Deborah Winger having a conversation on the bed, he's like, yeah, like, they both knew, like, I can't take care of these kids. Well, you're a piece of shit.
Well, I missed that bit.
He sucks. But before that, Deborah Winger's friend wanted just the daughter.
Yeah, that was also
up. And I'm like, what?
I'll take Melanie. I just want the sweet little girl. I don't want the other boys. Give me the girl. I don't want these stinky boys. No.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, what is that? Where you're just like willing to be like, I could handle all of them. I have the resources to handle all. I just want the girl, though.
Yeah, I felt so bad for these kids the whole movie, honestly. Yeah.
Apparently, Tommy in the sequel is like, he goes to jail. He has like a real.
I believe it.
Yeah, he has a real like.
He becomes a serial killer after all of this.
Well, he continues that anger thing because his mom dies and he doesn't say goodbye
to her. But also, they shove him off all the time. Like, there's that part where he's like, come on, let's go. And they end up in front of the church. And I don't know. It just, like I said, it kind of just feels like they got married young. They had kids young. And then she was like, I want my own life. And sometimes she just, honestly, it felt like she didn't give a shit about her kids. And he didn't give a shit about his kids either.
He's the worst.
They kind of both were bad parents. I'm sorry, but they were, like,
As Aurora said to Emma, how is your life going to get better if you keep having children?
Yeah.
That's what she said. You know when Aurora goes over to Garrett's house for a little bit of spotted tea or something, and he's got all these pictures up of him everywhere, and she's like, is this what you do to get girls? And I'd be like, mate, he's an astronaut, right? If I was an astronaut, I'd have pictures everywhere in the house of me in space, wouldn't you? It'd be like, it's like when you go to the Olympics and you get that Olympic ring tattoo on your arm so you can show everyone that you've been to the Olympics. If I was an astronaut, I'd probably get my face tattooed on my arm in a space shuttle or something like that. It's like the coolest job in the world. Why wouldn't you have photos of you being an astronaut in your house? Was she banging on?
That's his argument, though, back to her. He's like, yeah, there's only 106 of us. Of course I'm going to have memorabilia all over the place, like, you know, and I thought it was funny when they were just eating and there was, like, a picture of him in a space suit. That is so true, though. Like, he could just go to any bar and be like, you know, I've been to space, and I'm sure he was getting a lot of ladies. Can I say one of the funniest lines is when they're about to have sex, and he was like, I was doing laps. Lucky for us, I only did 8.
There were a bunch of one-liners that, like, sitcom one-liners that made for, like, the trailer. Like, yeah. When the doctor was like, we tell you to expect the worst but hope for the best. And she was like, oh, and they get let you get away with that, with saying that to people.
Yeah.
Like, there was, like, a soundbite every, like, 5 minutes or so that he...
I did like that line, because as soon as he said that, I was tutting to myself saying, what a dickhead. And then she responded with that, and that was a good line. What did you think then, Mikey? This was your pick. You felt like pushed into a corner because you looked at the year, 1983, that Marcy had given you, that she had decided you were going to have just so that she could get 1993 for some reason. And you looked at the movies, and there was obviously... Return of the Jedi, and that was looming over your head like a sword of Damocles. How do you feel now that you picked Terms of Endearment?
I feel good for this reason, because I think, you know, Return of the Jedi would have been a love fest, and not that I'm not a love fest, but I like critiquing this movie for a certain reason. I'm glad we all seem to be on the same page, because I was worried that I was not jiving with this movie, and I'd be off base. And I wonder if, like, that Oscar... Sometimes you hear it's an Oscar movie, or you hear this movie throughout the ages and you set the bar high, and that's what happened. Where I think if, like, I just happened to pick up this movie, or if it was like a foreign movie that I had no idea about, I'd be like, that was actually a good slice of life type of movie. And it was well done in terms of writing. But because it was like this, you know, it's just Academy Award winning movie. I expected like a lot from it. I just was not connecting really with anybody, but I'm glad we watched it. I think just because it's, For those reasons, I said, to figure out why, if it works. And I'm glad it doesn't always work sometimes.
Mikey, I'm glad you said that, because when I was growing up, I mean, I still love the Oscars, like I was saying earlier, but there was this, like, prestige to them when I was little, where it was like, these are the most important movies ever.
Yeah, right.
And then as you get older, and like I said, you realize the politics behind it, and that it's just all campaigning. And, you know, what's going on in the world at the time? What kind of message does Hollywood want to send the rest of the world? That's what wins every year. And that's really what it is. And then you realize, like, oh, there are way better movies this year. But I do really want to eventually see every movie that's won Best Picture, because it's just a stubborn thing that I have to do in my lifetime. So I got this one, finally got to see it. So thank you for picking it, Mikey. I am glad it's off the list now.
Dirk.
Well, Mikey, when you
surprise us with a huge thing, you're gonna surprise us now with the love fest.
Yeah, when you picked this movie last episode, I couldn't be any more disinterested in watching Terms of Endearment. It's not a movie I would ever have picked to watch or wanted to see. So I was fascinated by why you picked it. And I understand now that you did it because Marcy made you, because she gave you no other choice. And I actually really did like almost the sitcom element of it. I liked that. And I liked the kind of the, I did like the relationship between Emma and Aurora. I liked Jack and Aurora too. And I liked all the, like, the weird bits that didn't make any sense. Like Dan, like we said, Danny DeVito just being in a room. Why are you there, mate? I did quite like all of that, to the point whereby I was content. I think I didn't really get anything out of the cancer storyline. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel upset. I felt confused more than anything, I think. So I would have preferred that not to be there, and just it to have just continued on with maybe even like Emma choosing to live with Flap, even though she didn't want to, you know, and that we had when we could have a tragic ending in that way. It didn't have to necessarily be, I don't know, she gets cancer and dies or out of the blue. But overall, it's more positives than negatives for me, I would say. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't watch it again, though.
No. I think it's like one of those movies too. It's like so much of real life, but you even want to come out of a movie and be like, what would I have done differently, or what could they have done differently? And it's like, I don't know. It was just like their life, and it's sort of like, it didn't make me think harder about life. It just was like, yeah, it kind of sucks. There's a lot of shitty things that happen, and there you go. And I don't know if I want I don't know if I particularly gravitate. Not that I don't like realistic movies, but it's sort of like I need to be left with some sort of resolution that was maybe escaped on me. And I think you guys are more in tune with those feelings and the emotional intelligence. So I'm actually glad that you are justifying my feelings.
We're all the same.
I will say
we're all the same.
One thing I think, if we want to come full circle with this movie, I feel like though Emma and Aurora have like a good relationship, it's not the healthiest relationship. So maybe she gets to just try again with Emma's kids is the whole point of this. Like, she gets another chance to be a mom and
watch the
learn
sequel,
from
then?
Her mistakes of...
Would you watch that sequel?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't care enough. That's what I mean. I don't care
no, enough. But that's like, it's a fun open-ended ending, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
we didn't need a sequel, though.
True.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
I was shocked to see there was a sequel. I was like, how have you done a sequel to this film? But flabbergasted,
and comes back as a zombie. That would have been pretty cool. Actually,
I did think it. I did like to come back to something you said before, Marcy. I did quite like the relationship between Emma and Sam, John Lithgow's character, and that kind of the way that she sort of said at one point, "I'm glad I don't know if Flat has actually had an affair, because now I know, because I do know then that my feelings for you are real." You know, she's not just doing it out of vengeance or spite because of...
Yeah.
And I thought that was really smart and clever and a really sort of astute observation of an affair. But still, yeah. I did think that was good. And John Lithgow's character was very tender and very sweet.
I loved when he kissed her and like literally picked her off the ground.
Yeah,
it was really cute. I thought he was really sweet in this movie. He's like the only one that helped her at the grocery store. He knew she was in some, like, I think they were trying to buy get a mortgage for a house, and he's like, "Oh, we had to turn you down," and he felt like sorry about that. But I thought they were really cute together, honestly. I was kind of hoping more would come of that, but whatever. Mm-hmm. She got cancer, so it didn't happen. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there we
How about
go.
Jeff Daniels, the fair girl, looked exactly like Deborah Winger, too. It was like, what was
I think she was like, but of course, the classic Mikey, she was 15 years younger or something like that, wasn't she? She was some kind of graduate. I was like, what kind of plan have you got, Jeff Daniels, right? You act like you didn't have an affair with this woman, your grad student. You act like, oh, I didn't have an affair. But then you move your whole family to wherever it was, Nebraska, and she comes along with you. How are you hiding that, mate? What is this? Is that how affairs worked in the 80s? It was just like, chill.
Because she's like, you know, I'm waiting for Flap to have a conversation with you. And like that conversation, and I don't see happening. And then like, there's one point where she asked her mom for money. They need money desperately. I don't really see the resolution of that. It was like a lot of clips and there was no, you know, resolution to a lot of those stories. It definitely was like a play. If I saw this as a play, I would have been like, that was really good. Like, those were good performances, but... For a film, I think like I have a higher bar, maybe. I don't know.
Well, there we go.
We did it.
Terms of Endearment from the 1983. I even had to look up the year then just to my crib sheet, even though I know it's an anniversary mix and it's 40 years ago.
So can but we before re-record, we're going to record tomorrow the Empire Strikes, Return of the Jedi, right? We're going to do that. We're going to
sure.
We all three of us watched it. So. But before we can record the Return of the Jedi episode, we've got to do song choices for Terms of Endearment. If you're new to the movie mixtape, we are trying to recreate the spirit of that beautiful mixtape that you might have made back in the 70s, 80s, 90s for a friend of yours to share some things that you loved with them, albeit music, and now we're sharing movies, maybe your master's age, and you shared playlists. That's okay. But it's the movie mixtape. And so we're picking up song choices that we're connecting with this film. And then if you click in the show notes, there will be a link to our playlist of all the song choices we've had from previous episodes. It's a Spotify list. So if you don't do Spotify, I'm sorry about that. But it's still good. So shall I go? I feel like I want to go first. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, good. Because... we've had a few movies where in fact, Logan recently, that was about like parents, wasn't it, as well? And like people dying. So I was kind of like, oh, I'm going to stay away from parents and dying. And I've gone with more a reflection of that. I really did feel that it was a biography of Emma's life. So I've gone with a song called Life Story, My Life Story by Angie Stone. Do you know that?
I don't.
No. It goes like this. Hidden my life story, and it's all you owe me. And then other stuff comes in. So that's what I've gone for this time, mainly because it was Emma's life story from cradle to dead. Who's next?
I will go next because it's Mikey's pick. You sing it too.
Okay.
I have to sing it? No. So I was just so... What started my search for a song this week was that Jack Nicholson was an astronaut, so I wanted something space-related.
Oh, cool.
And one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite singers ever, her name is Nico Case. She's amazing. And the song is called I Wish I Was the Moon. So there's the space element, the moon, but the line in the song that always gets me is, I'm so lonely, I wish I was the moon tonight. And I kind of feel like there's just so many points in this movie where Emma and Aurora are both just so lonely, and you can have empathy with that. Mm. There's nothing more relatable than being lonely. And so there we go, space and loneliness. That's my song. You're welcome.
That's cool. I'm disgusted with that, Marcy.
Why?
Disgusted. Because it's a good choice and it makes sense. And you've sickened me with it. Sickened me with your professionalism in this segment when normally it's for slacking off.
I feel like you guys,
Mikey,
you guys kind of really think hard about it and try to do something outside the box, and I kind of go for the obvious thing. Thinking about like 1983 and my parents always having like folk music on, guitar music, and I landed on a song that kind of made it seem like a conversation between family members and about life and things getting older, and I landed on Fleetwood Mac's Landslide from Rumours. And it's song, like, I guess, like a lot of the lyrics about kids getting older, people getting older, and just, you know, reflecting on life. And that's kind of what this movie seemed to be, like a whole full life of Emma Greenway Horton, I think her name was. Yeah.
Mikey, can beautiful. I tell you something?
You were going to pick it.
No, that is a very big song for my mom and me. So you did it.
Okay.
You did it. Good. There you go.
So that's our song choices. I think we can all agree that mine is the worst and the other two are better. But if you want to vote,
that means you'll win the poll.
But if you want to vote on that, Marcy, don't step all over me when I'm doing the bit that I have to do. Come on. If you go onto our Instagram feed at the_moviemixtape, and on the weekend after this comes out, you can vote in the poll to see who you think is the best song. At the moment, the runaway leader is Mikey. Hello, Mikey. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. Marcy, you've won one, right?
Yeah.
Mikey's won three, wow. I think.
You know, we tied. And you guys tied once, and he's won two.
Okay, it's fine.
Out of the three of us, the one that's the least into music, too, keeps winning the music show. That's funny.
Least into music. Vomit in my mouth there, Mikey.
Compared to you two.
But yeah, please do go check us out on Instagram at the_moviemixtape. And Mikey, we didn't mention it at the time because I don't think we'd seen the Logan art when we did the Logan episode. But my good golly, that is some incredible, beautiful art. If you need to see Mikey's art because you haven't seen it already, then you should head over to our Instagram because it is so bloody gorgeous. What was in your brain when you were doing that? Just like... masterpiece.
I think you guys started the trend where I was like trying this season. I was trying to do more, you know, non-digital pieces, and I'm trying to do something to give you guys. I sent you guys the art for the last couple episodes, so like that was my idea for Logan. Maybe I'll hand it off to my kids one day, or lucky.
Oh yeah,
maybe we have a raffle. Maybe we have a lucky winner raffle.
Me.
Somebody wants it. Okay.
Me. Yeah, me. You're winking at me there, Mike. You're winking at me, Mikey.
I'll split it in half and I'll fly to different corners of the world.
But yeah, thank you for that, Mikey.
Thank
so
you, Mikey.
All the art is amazing, but you know, like when that came through, I think me and Marcy just lost a gallon of water from our bodies. But there we go. If you have lost a gallon of water while looking at Mikey's art, then why don't you write to us at the movie mixtape pod at gmail.com. I totally forgot how you did email addresses then. And I was like, I didn't pause for dramatic effect. I paused because I'm an imbecile and couldn't remember what an email address was. The movie mixtape pod at gmail.com. Thank you. We do have an email. So here it is. And we mentioned him earlier on. But it is only Tim.
Oh, Tim.
Bloody Hamilton.
Tim.
Do you know what? He sent us that. He sent us an email that we read out on the Logan episode.
No, we read it on Bill and Ted. We read it on Bill.
Oh, thanks, Marcy.
You're welcome.
We read it on Bill and Ted.
But he commented on the Logan post. Where was
the... He's like, did you not get my email? And we're like, Tim, you must know, because he records about 6 months ahead of time. that not everything is done the day before, Tim. But here is his other email. Hey, I don't know if you lost my last email. Jeez, let it go, Tim. But I've sent in another missive, hoping it gets through. Logan, really enjoyed hearing your thoughts about one of the best X-Men movies. This movie has a special memory for me. On my birthday, my wife and I randomly walked into the 14th Street Theatre to watch Logan after eating a fantastic sushi meal. Mostly because she told me we could do whatever I wanted on my birthday. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tim, keep that in your diary.
Raising our eyebrows. Yep.
Keep it in your diary.
Thus, I chose to see Logan and not the Logan's Run revival playing in Cinema 3. I had read nothing about Logan, and I never read the Old Man Logan comics, so I went in blind and was surprised every step of the way. My most memorable part? Being upset that Professor X died, thinking that Wolverine killed him. Enjoy the show, Tim.
God, what a storyteller. Tim. What a storyteller that guy is. Jeez.
And I think we discussed that pivotal scene, didn't we, in our episode, hey?
I think we touched on it, yeah.
We touched on it, just gently touched on it. But Tim, thank you for sending that in. And look, God, you know what? We did get your email, mate. All right, stop going on about it now. You've heard it probably because Bill and Ted's come out since Logan's come out. So now you've got emails on two successive shows. You're the best, Tim. You're the best. Nobody doubts that. Thank you. Nobody doubts it.
Yes, thank you, mm-hmm. Tim.
And your book is incredible. It's Meet the Super Duper 7.
It's so much fun.
So if you want to be cool like Tim, then send us the books that you've written. If you email us, we'll give you our addresses. Or you can just write in to the movie mixtape pod at gmail.com. That's it. That's all we got time for. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
No.
So we got another episode in a couple of weeks' time. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal, though, Marcy, right? This next episode is a big deal because it is officially, although not actually, but it is officially, but not actually, episode number 50.
It is episode 50.
And who gets to pick the movie choice for episode 50? Mikey, who gets to pick it? Who would you guess gets to pick the next choice?
Try to think of the movies that came out in 1993. I'm thinking, who's the biggest Mrs. Doubtfire fan here? I think that movie came out. Fuck, he's British. What the?
No, he hates
I'm happily
going to
link.
He hates that
I'm going to. I'm going to happily link to my Mrs. Doubtfire review in the show notes.
Oh, Dumb and Dumber. Mm-hmm. That's another one.
That's 94. Mikey, that's 94. Get your shit together. What are you doing?
Mrs. Doubtfire is 92 also, too. So let me think.
Okay.
93, something came out. 30th anniversary or something. I don't know. I give up. Why don't you tell
me? Well,
I
didn't know. But Marcy, it falls to you to pick the movie not only for the 30th anniversary of a 1993 movie, but also for the movie mixtape's official 50th episode. No pressure. No pressure. Me and Mikey have no idea what you're going to pick. We're all absolutely, you know, flummoxed at the idea. Okay. Why don't you tell us?
Okay, I think I need to do something for this. I do this with Kai all the time. So I go do 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 do.
It's the Muppets.
It's Terms of Endearment again. Yay, we're doing it round two. No, I am picking, of course, I'm picking Jurassic Park from 1993.
Woo!
It's happening.
Or as,
woo!
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the listeners.
Or as Alan Partridge.
They don't get to see the head bobbing when Marcy sings that song.
It's almost like Marcy engineered this entire mixtape just so that she could do Jurassic Park on episode 50. Almost like it. Wink, wink.
I already have my synopsis written. And I already have my song picked out.
But that's it. Strap yourself in.
Hold on to your butts.
Steady your cockles.
Hold on to your butts. You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
Hold on to your butts. Hold on to your glasses of water, yet they may reverberate due to the stomping of a Tyrannosaurus Rex next episode, as we, the movie mixtape crew, do 1993's Jurassic Park. So if you've got opinions on that, why don't you email in? But they'll end up getting read out on an episode 4 months in the future. But do it anyway, okay? And we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Suck on that, you suckers. Do, 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 do.
Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Dirk, Mikey P, and me, Marcy. Episodes edited by Dirk and Marcy. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us on Instagram at @the_moviemixtape or email us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Bye. Hello, everybody. It's your favorite host, Dirk Field.
God. Oh, God. Oh my God.
That's what you sound like. Now do me. You've never sounded that happy in your entire life, so I'm sorry. You're right.
Well, exactly. That's why you got it wrong.
Should I just be a miserable old man?
Miserable middle-aged man.
Everybody imitates me. They go like, "Oh, Michael P." My whole life, they put that voice on, that face too. Oh, what?
Oh my God! I'm walking here. It's me, Mikey P.